Welcome, everyone. This is Caitlin Castell here with Daniel Gemario, and we're excited to be offering the next in our series on the teleclasses, the Jupiter in Cancer. A lot going on with Jupiter in Cancer, so we have a lot to share. Very excited about that. Just one quick announcement, and that is that we do still have space in the Hawaii event on Maui, so that's happening August 17th to 24th, so if you suddenly feel a calling to come join us there, we'll be celebrating the full moon rising over the crater of Haleakala, the second Aquarius full moon. There will be two, one in July and one in August, so very exciting time to connect with. And wondering if there's anything else you can think of, Daniel? Hello, where did he go? Uh-oh, I think I lost him. Oh, no. All right, well, I guess what I'll do is I think he's probably waiting to get back on. So I'll just go ahead and start a little bit. Wasn't really thinking about doing this, but hopefully we still have people jumping on the call as well. Anyway, so just to give you a little bit of background, Jupiter has just moved into Cancer. It happened on June 25th. Very timely movement into Cancer, as Mercury was also stationing retrograde in Cancer the very next day. So the Sun in Cancer, Mercury in Cancer, Jupiter in Cancer, we've had a very powerful alignment going on here the last few days, and will be powerfully effective for the entire month of July with Mercury staying in Cancer the whole time due to its retrograde. So it's activating the Cancer mysteries as well. And something that's very fascinating about all of that is that it is part of a big grand trine. We have Saturn in Scorpio, we have Chiron in Pisces, we have Neptune in Pisces, Neptune, Saturn, and Jupiter are going to create a very close grand trine around the time that Mars enters on the 13th. They'll all be right around 4 degrees of the water signs. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. I'm just going to check my email to see if Daniel is emailing me to tell me what happened, because he was on the call just a minute ago. And I don't know what happened to him or where he went. So I'm wondering if he's having trouble getting back in. Yeah, there you are.
Yeah, I was hearing you, and then all of a sudden this word said muted.
Oh.
You accidentally muted me.
Did you call in on the participant code, or did you call in on the host code?
865-792.
Oh, okay. So, sorry, you should have, that shouldn't have happened, because I muted the rest of the call, but anyway.
I heard a voice say mute, and then I heard you, but you didn't hear me.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. Well, glad you're here. I just talked a little bit about Jupiter having just moved into Cancer with the Mercury retrograde. So anyway, feel free to jump in.
Okay. So this teleclass gives us the opportunity to in-depth discuss Jupiter, its function, and then also to have a pretty rich, deep discussion around what the Cancer Mystery School is all about. And I think maybe we'll discuss in general those two things first, and then we'll have an opportunity to go into more specific things like certain Jupiter cycles, Jupiter returns, Jupiter complexes, what happens to Cancer when Jupiter is there, issues that can be related directly to people's questions around their own charts. But let's begin by actually exploring Cancer, the mystery school of Cancer, because the thing about the transits or the ingresses of planets into different signs, particularly the slower moving ones, Jupiter out, then we actually have that planet activating different elements in different ways of that mystery school. So in shamanic astrology, we're calling the sign of Cancer a mystery school. In other ways of looking at it, we call it one of the 12 tribes. But in this case, we're going to look at it as one of the 12 mystery schools. So we're exploring what is the nature of Cancer globally and historically here first. We in shamanic astrology have looked at four of the signs, which are usually in mainstream astrology referred to as the cardinal signs. We refer to them as the culture bearer signs, sometimes called householder. Those four being Cancer, Capricorn, Aries, and Libra. And over long periods of time, those are the four places on the wheel of life that involve making the decisions and organizing things in such a way that there's sustainability from one generation to the next. They're the ones who build the world, to hold the world together, operating within, for the most part, middle world affairs. So if we look at, say, the last 6,000-7,000 years, those four have had very specific functions. Libra, for example, has to do with the sustainability of agreement-oriented long-term relationships, including marriage and things like that. Aries generally refers to the function of protecting the culture, the guardians, the warriors, the ones that protect the boundaries of the cultural traditions. Cancer and Capricorn are the ones more associated with family and the way in which the organization of the culture operates over time. Interestingly, within patriarchy, then we have that identification of Cancer more with the function of mother and Capricorn more with the function of father. We, however, for quite some time now in our school, have tried to see how the human journey operates outside or beyond or in a larger sense than what our cultural conditioning has been. So we certainly now these days, and some of you have heard these discussions regarding Capricorn, that Capricorn involves more the function of the circle of grandmothers, the kind of administrative and directorship that can come from the feminine principle in order to hold together the earth and being concerned for the generations to follow. So I just want to make that clear at this portion of our discussion that Cancer, we do not just look at that as mother. However, the Cancer Mystery School, and maybe we can just define it here at this point, in shamanic astrology, Cancer is defined as how do we provide responsible and personal and hierarchical nourishment to others, or we could say how do we provide nourishment to a seed until the seed grows to what for it would be its maturity. Certainly, the best-known literal example of such a thing would be a parents having a child. And then there would be the commitment over a period of time until that child reaches a certain degree of maturity. And depending on what the nature of the culture is, 15 years, 18 years, 21 years, I certainly know certain cases in Cancer where when the Cancer Mystery School is being referenced, there could be someone, a parent, let's say, that's not letting go of their child until 29 or 41, or so there can be various points where you hold on to them too long, but it's still that a capacity to commit to the growth of the seed, and whether it's a child, whether it's pets, whether it's a garden, whether it's a client, whether it's a relationship, to be dedicated and committed to it until it grows to what its authentic or healthy maturity would be. So if we look at the history of humanity within the mystery school of Cancer, are all the ways in which different cultures have organized their culture in order to raise the children, to keep have security, to organize the way parents and children relate to each other. I mean, all kinds of questions like, do we have a patrilineal situation? Do we have a matrilineal situation? I recently have learned in parts of South Asia, they had a system that was parallel. In other words, they would have the line of descent and the inheritance of property and so on would happen on both the female side and the male side. There's a technical term for that, but the point of this conversation is that cancer, the Cancer Mystery School, has to do with those kinds of things. And any time we investigate a mystery school, we have to determine or have to ascertain the difference between the essence of the sign, the mystery school, and what the content of it is. So maybe in certain cultures, at certain time periods in history, cancer, it would be like a nuclear family with certain very defined roles of mother and father. In other cultures, it would be very different. And any time we are at a turning of the ages, like we are now, these things are all up in the air. We're kind of revisioning how these ways of organizing culture, what would be the best way, actually, as we go farther into the future? What works? What really does have a concern for the well-being of the children, for sustainability, for the seven generations to follow? Both Cancer and Capricorn are very much related to that Native American understanding of, like, we make no decisions save for the benefit of the generations to follow, with some reference to what was good about what happened before. You know, so it is in the category of being, quote, traditional or conservative, but I certainly don't mean to say conservative the way that word is used in Western politics, American politics at this particular time in history. So the imagery of the emphasis of the Cancer Mystery School includes giving, caring. It's a water sign. It's concerned with the well-being of those that we love personally, and the direction of that caring is hierarchical. And what do I mean by hierarchical here? Parents and children, teachers and students. Spiritual teachers and chelas, therapists and clients, that type of organization of providing and giving love. And then in the larger sense, you know, how are we going to build a new world? And how's cancer unfolding at this point? How is it reinventing itself at this point? And how are we cooperating with that reinvention? And that is where Jupiter comes in. So let's just pause for a moment on that beginning conversation regarding what is the nature of cancer, and then to bring a little bit about Jupiter in. Unless, Kaylin, if you want to jump in before I start on Jupiter with any of the elements of the Cancerian Mystery School that have always been most important in your own understanding of it that I didn't touch on there.
I think you covered it really well. The one thing I would add is that I saw a documentary recently. It was talking about the importance of when families are healthy and you know, the children feel nurtured and supported and so on, that they have found on all levels, whether it's in terms of personal health and you know, economic and everything flourishes in that situation. And when there's you know, parents aren't getting along and they're not communicating, and you know, there's violence in the home and those kinds of things happening, then there's a decline and the children suffer as a result. So that just brings to mind this idea of how important it is, and you know, that the cancer mysteries are really asking the question, how can I nurture and support and create a safe space for not only the children, but whatever the projects might be, or, you know, for any human being, really, that is part of their clan, tribe, family. Maybe we're now in the time where we're going to extend that out to a see that it's a global family, not just...
Indeed, yeah, which actually brings up the, what could be thought of as the shadow side of the Cancer Mystery School, is that at its most, in its most limited sense, the shadow side of cancer would be that proclivity that can sometimes happen with cancer. I love my children and will do anything for my children, but we don't really care about any other children. Or the peculiar kind of clannishness or provincialism, maybe an extreme example would might be the very peculiar form of love that members of a skinhead gang might have for each other, but then how much hatred they have for others. The least elevating versions of patriotism, of the downside of cancer is probably what inspired, I believe it was Voltaire to say, patriotism is the last refuge of scoundrels. it's a very limited view, that it's only my team. Everybody else we don't have any attention for. But as you said just a minute ago there, at this time in history, and this is partly what Jupiter, I think, is about here, moving into cancer is expanding our vision of this to global family, not just my family, but the fact that we are all so amazingly related. I mean, we're all every human being on the planet today, we all share the same DNA going back at least 240,000 years. Same clan mothers, same clan fathers, the same group of folks, you know, and the differences between us are far less than our similarities. We really are all one family. And even from a purely practical level, we must look at the entire planet as a whole. And one of my heroes, fairly well-known triple cancer from the 1930s, who was born in the 1930s, Buckminster Fuller. I mean, his whole view was spaceship Earth. And we can't make it, we have to make it work for everybody, or we're not going to be able to make it work for anybody.
Right.
He was dedicated.
Yeah, we're all in the same canoe, as the Hawaiians would say, or on the same spaceship. Yeah.
So that's a little bit about just getting bringing up to for view here with some of the flavor and texture and of the Cancer Mystery School. But what now? Let's bring Jupiter in. Jupiter has been referred to in other cultures as the year star. The year star. Because Jupiter takes approximately a year to move through a whole sign. It's slightly less, 11.5 months. But in a general way, you know, I kind of agree with Robert Hand that one of the things that makes astrology really work, I mean, the organizing principle behind it, it works on whole numbers, you know, so 11.5 months, and it's almost nearly 1 year. So it's the year star, and in shamanic astrology, in our school, our own views about Jupiter have come from the synthesis of many of the best features about how Jupiter had been seen elsewhere. So, for example, let's look at India. In India, they still, to this day, do not use planets beyond Saturn. You know, so many of the principles of spirituality are in Jupiter. In fact, Jupiter is called Guru in India. So that's one clue that we were inspired by in looking at Jupiter. And then there's this aforementioned year star phenomena. In fact, in China, the original Chinese zodiac, the thing that in popular culture today, it's like, well, what are you? I'm a rat. Well, we rats get on with monkeys, and you know, and so basically attributing a certain set of characteristics to an entire year, that originally came from Jupiter, the movement of Jupiter through a constellation, and that was the origin of that whole tradition in China. So we have like certain characteristics that do show up to represent an entire year. Then we have this imagery of spirituality that would be associated with Jupiter. And then we can add to that a lot of the different things that are pretty much totally agreed upon by almost every astrological tradition. The Jupiter symbolizes expansion. Whatever Jupiter hits, it expands. One thing I should mention here is that in shamanic astrology, we do not make the mistake, or at least we try not to make the mistake, of polarization or of dualistic thinking. You know, like Jupiter good, Saturn bad. Or if we use the word expansion, you know, well, not every form of expansion is necessarily, quote, good. But let's if we just think of Jupiter as always involving some kind of expansion, whatever it hits, it expands. It's like an accenting of that through expansion. I sometimes like, at its best, to think of the action of Jupiter as an activation of enthusiasm. And even this, of course, fits into the alchemical traditions and the Hermetic traditions, where they would actually attribute certain psychological states to each planet. And connected to Jupiter was enthusiasm and jovialness. You know, the word joviality. I mean, Jove, by Jove. Jove is a word for Jupiter, actually. You know, so all of these sort of emotional colorings that are connected in a magical way of thinking to the different planets. So that enthusiasm, the joviality, that expansion that can come when Jupiter hits anything, as we'll discover later in our conversation, if let's say there's a portion of a chart where there's a complex of planets that have included in those complexes challenges. Well, if Jupiter hits that point, it's also expanding the challenge. You know, so Jupiter hitting Pluto is an expansion of the underworld dimension. But if to go back to the starting point of our inquiry here, the movement of Jupiter into Cancer. Kellen, did you give the data on it?
I did. No, I didn't give it yet. I haven't given it yet, and I can do that anytime, whenever you want.
Right. So actually, we're doing this call now because it was just last week that Jupiter made its ingress into Cancer, beginning that 11.5 by on average month time period. The Jupiter is going back and forth through, you know, including a retrograde loop, going through Cancer. So we therefore have the Jupiter symbol, the Jupiter action, the expansive action, turning our attention to the mystery school of Cancer, the expansion of Cancer, the expansion of the Cancer mystery school, and what we were describing before is what the nature of Cancer, what is the Cancerian mystery school about. Jupiter will expand that.
It is interesting to note that Jupiter will be in Cancer slightly longer than a year, actually, because it doesn't go into Leo until July 16th of 2014. So it's one of those just where it happens to be in the sign a little bit longer than usual.
Mm-hmm. The average 11.5, and one of the things that I think we were talking about before the beginning of the teleclass was that pattern of ingress. You know, so we had Jupiter move into Cancer previously on July 13th, 2001. And 12 years before that, it was July 31st,
1989.
And
I did look up the ones back that go all the way back to 1906, if you want those. But, you know, the next one will be June 8th, 2025.
And then the one we just had was in late June, so you can see then how that matches the pattern of less than 1 year, you know, so that it's 11.5 on average. But as you pointed out, sometimes maybe due to the nature of the retrograde cycle, due to certain more technical astronomical reasons, you can have it be slightly longer than a year. But the average over a long period of time is 11.5 months.
Yeah, it's about, it looks like it's about 11 and a half months. Mm-hmm. From the time it ingresses till the next mm-hmm. time it ingresses, which is actually almost 12 years later, but it's a half mm-hmm. a month less
right.
each time. Right.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yes. But you could have any given year due to these, when you're averaging things out over a long period of time, there could be one time when the planet is actually in a sign for longer, slightly longer than a year, as you pointed out there. This is actually going to be in Cancer slightly longer than a year. So then if we look at this from a cultural perspective, from a global perspective, not yet relating it to individual charts, then we have as a broad theme of understanding on what's happening in the world stage as a global process, is the emphasis on to kind of like bringing up to global humanity, what are you doing about cancer? What is your relationship with cancer? How is cancer being expanded? And what always comes up for me when I think of cancer, when something cancerian is being expanded, is it actually sets up some tension between those who are holding on to a more limited cultural view of cancer and then those who want to expand it to the perspective of the entire globe. So you would have a strong emphasis at a time period when Jupiter is moving through Cancer or Capricorn regarding what that issue called the culture wars. And this also is hugely related to something we'll be talking about here in a few minutes, which is what happens when Jupiter is also moving into alignment with the outer planet transits that are happening at any given time. So what I'm speaking of here is that, and we've had several classes about this, is the Uranus-Pluto square and how that relates to the Uranus-Pluto conjunction from 1965 to 1968. And how that related to a previous one in 1930 to 1934. And any time Jupiter moves into close relationship with those slower-moving planets that form these greater alignments, like Uranus-Pluto, then it's expanding that too. So we're having, we should be having, and we are now, but certainly it's going to increase between now and a remarkable intensification of the Jupiter effect to the Uranus-Pluto pattern in April of next year. So in between now and April of next year, this expansion tension regarding limited views of culture to more expanded views of culture are going to be just totally in the front lines of what humanity is going through.
So we've already been seeing some of that showing up in the news, in the recent news of the, I feel like the Supreme Court decision on the Defense of Marriage Act was huge, kind of reflection of Jupiter's move into Cancer.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it's just continued oscillation, good news, bad news, the forces of reaction or expansion are expanding, and then also the forces of breaking through to a more global, a larger perspective also expanding. And this tension is likely to be seen increasing, and my gosh, the when you look ahead to what configurations are happening next April, with where Jupiter will be in relationship to the Uranus-Pluto square. We're just getting started on it, actually.
mm-hmm.
All right, so I think that gives some flavoring to the nature of Jupiter, what Jupiter is for, and then also a bit about the Cancer Mystery School. But one thing I wanted to next bring up with regards to Jupiter, is that Jupiter, and this is one of the things that we were inspired by from the way they look at Jupiter in India, and relating that to life purpose. So in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School paradigm, Jupiter by sign will represent a dharma or a spiritual path. And I've already indicated that Cancer is in the category of being culture bearer. So if someone happens to have on their chart Jupiter in Cancer, then that's placing their dharma in the householder category. I guess you could say that the 12 different Jupiter signs, the different signs that Jupiter can be in over 12 years, represent 12 authentic spiritual paths, 12 different ways of becoming enlightened, 12 different ways of achieving life and fulfilling our original intent, life purpose. And this brings up the really important issue of the Jupiter returns. Now I don't know about you, Kaylin, but certainly, and I kind of know what you're going to say here, but as a practicing astrologer, you know, that is working with 15, 20 people a week, whenever Jupiter moves into a new sign, then it establishes a pattern. It seems for a period of time, more than half the people will come for readings or have something important, you know, whether it's the Jupiter return itself or whether it's Jupiter, hitting the rising sign or Jupiter conjunct the sun or like something really important happening in that sign that Jupiter is going through. And I certainly am already seeing it. I mean, it seems like every other reading I'm talking about, Cancer will soon be going across your Venus, or, you know, or Jupiter will soon be on your midheaven, you know, and then giving feedback on that. Whenever Jupiter moves into a new sign, it's just like, all right, all these people are on the front lines, you know, the people who have that have important things on their chart in that sign.
Right, I've definitely been seeing a lot of that too.
Now, back to the Jupiter return. We would consider this to be among the most important cycles anyone can go through. When we look at cycles, there are different tiers of importance. Certain kinds of cycles are the most important cycles we can go through. And then there will be like a second or third or fourth tier. One of the skills of a shamanic astrologer it has to do with being able to determine priorities. You know, what are the? There's so many things you could look at. I mean, you could be looking at 150 asteroids. You could be looking at about 25 or 30 minor aspects. But how do you determine really, really what is on the front lines of importance in determining what a person is going through? And at the highest tier of importance is the Jupiter return, Jupiter returning to its original place, which happens approximately every 12 years. You know, so if a person is 11 to 12, 23 to 24, 35 to 36, 47 to 48, 59 to 60, 71, 72, these are the best known, you can have one at 83, 84 also. But about every 12 years, we have these waves of Jupiter. And that's like, it is really like a wave coming in. Whenever I'm working with someone who has a Jupiter return, I frequently ask them, you know, let's check, think back to the one that happened before and the one that happened before. And you can get broad themes. Now, I don't mean by this everything that happened to a person in those years, but particularly, what was turning you on? What were you enthusiastic about? Like this wave coming in, I often like to use an analogy, it's a surfing analogy. And then let's imagine for a moment that a person is, in fact, a surfer. They're best known for surfing, they love surfing, maybe they're even a professional surfer. And what would happen in a Jupiter return is that would be the time period when that surfer becomes aware of an island they'd never heard of before that has even bigger waves and longer rides. And it would be very easy for that person to know what they would be doing next. You know, they would go to that place that has bigger waves and longer rides. Jupiter returns are really progressive and future-oriented in being able to capture the next wave. For many people, it's a point of becoming re-enthused about what their life journey is about. I'm often reminded, I mean, my favorite work of literature that gives a good sense of what the Jupiter process is that Hermann Hesse book called Journey to the East, which to me is a brilliant example of how a person could, through a series of synchronicities, once again realize that wave of idealism, that wave of all things again becoming possible on the human journey, that you can get on that, that wave can come in again. It's not finished. It's not over. So there's a kind of rejuvenation that can come with these more progressive Jupiter waves that can come in.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, you know, maybe Jupiter and Cancer, if that's someone's dharma to see how they can be, you know, answer the question, how can they be nurturing and supportive and, you know, create that safe space for the children, whether that be the literal children or the child within, you know, say from a counseling perspective or whatever, then that might be a time when they would some kind of additional training or, you know, expanding that experience base for them and that kind of endeavor, whatever that might be.
Totally. And for example, another type of cycle that is useful and helpful to know about, in addition to the Jupiter returns, would be the transit of Jupiter over the angles of the chart. Very helpful to know about that. And, you know, like Jupiter hitting the bottom of the chart, Jupiter hitting the IC. What if a person wanted to sell their house so they would have resources to do something else? It's would be expansive in that sense. What if a person wanted to they loved where they live, but they're not going to, you know, move somewhere else, but they want to expand. You know, let's put in the additional rooms. Person has a business, and it's like, well, this is where we would expand the empire or franchise the idea or some sense of expansion and having the support for that expansion. But then sometimes, as we were mentioning before, there can be too much expansion.
Right.
Jupiter to Pluto, as we said, or Pluto to Neptune. You know, Jupiter to Neptune. Expansion of not knowing.
Right. But also just even taking on too much, trying to do too much, feeling all this enthusiastic energy and, oh, yes, I could do this, and then, you know, get in the middle of it and realize, oh, my God, I'm not physically capable of taking on this much, because overdoing it is a big challenge with Jupiter.
It becomes manic.
Right. So having a little balance there, especially when it's in Cancer, really, because it is Cancer being so much about nurturing. So how do we nurture ourselves in the process and looking at what it is that we're taking on and engaging?
So thanks for mentioning that, because it brings up one of the other things that it's most important to remember when we think of Cancer. I had mentioned one version of the shadow side of Cancer, which is the provincialism, you know, and the I love my kids but nobody else's. But there's another shadow that can happen within Cancer, which is what you're alluding to here, which is overgiving. But the overgiving, if we look at it in a very deep way, is an honest mistake. It comes about from a misunderstanding, and the misunderstanding can be relieved by looking at it in a larger view. So, for example, it's absolutely natural and authentic for cancer to want to give. An example that also that always comes up for me is that, like, say, a mother is having has a child, and the mother really wants to have a child. In the first few years, it hardly matters that much to the mother that she only sleeps a few hours, because there is such a feeling of appreciation and value coming back naturally when one is a giver. But this is the thing that we can lose sight of. If a person is engaged in authentic, instinctual cancer as cancer is intended to be, there is a natural sense of aliveness that comes from giving. Automatically, one is feeling strong at the end of the day, refreshed, feeling good because they are a giver. But then what if we are in a situation where we're doing everything we think we're supposed to be doing as far as giving? In fact, we could even prove in a court of law that we've given everything in the best possible way, that we're feeling drained or taken advantage of, or it becomes a giver version of Sisyphus rolling the stone up the hill, and it crashes down every day. That's actually also built into the Cancer Mystery School, which is to, if you are feeling that way, maybe, just maybe, that's the time to change the game. Because if you are authentically in a position of being a giver and you're feeling that way, that's the universe trying to get your attention. Unfortunately, most people, when they get in that position, think, well, the thing that's wrong is they haven't given enough. when actually it's a set of instructions to actually note that if you're going to be a giver and you feel good being a giver, that if you don't feel good after giving so much, you're probably not on track. It's time to find some other avenue to provide nourishment.
Or perhaps just to also maybe step back and nourish themselves, because if you're, you know, if you've run the well dry, there's nothing more to give. So sometimes the balance, finding that balance of being able to give to yourself and support yourself in the process of then being able to give more to others. And so maybe it's not the giving per se, but that they've left themselves out of the equation.
Right, and then usually it starts by then getting into another variation of the shadow of cancer, which is that a person at the very end of the game, where they're just so drained and they just they've been giving so much that they fall into, again, like an honest mistake, they end up becoming then the person who's giving in order to get.
Right.
And you never want to get to that point. Because the receiving of love, the receiving of nourishment, the receiving of value and appreciation should naturally be happening. And if you get to the point where you're trying to force what you think is supposed to be the fair return, well, then you're really past the point of changing the game. So when we do open this up to questions. Pretty much anything is on the table here as far as any particular Jupiter cycles that you might be in, any questions regarding anything we brought up about the nature of Jupiter and the nature of Cancer, whether you're in a Jupiter return or what maybe you're in another kind of Jupiter transit, what your own experiences have been with Jupiter transits. It's all on the table. What we've presented so far is just to show you the field that we're investigating. All things Jupiter, all things Cancer. Before opening it up, though, I know that, Kaylin, you had been, I think you might want to spend a few minutes talking about what you noticed, and this has to do with the larger story of the things like the Uranus-Pluto square and, you know, other configurations that have an immense importance to the global process, and then what Jupiter can do to that.
Right. So if we look at, I just looked at the ones that are surrounding this particular Jupiter in Cancer time. And so if we look back to 2001, when Jupiter was in Cancer, there really wasn't anything else going on in the cardinal signs or householder signs, except that the North Node was with Jupiter at that particular time. So an expansion of the destiny of whatever it is that the Cancer mysteries were coming about. Kind of interesting because it was July 13th, 2001 when Jupiter went into Cancer. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was the year we had the World Trade Centers, the planes crashing into the World Trade Centers, 9/11, and kind of galvanizing people and paying more attention to how we're all interconnected and
until it then collapsed back into a a Fortress America against the world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right, but there was an opening. There was a hard opening for
it. It was.
Time.
No, it's totally true. There was an opening there, yes.
Right, and in July 31st, 1989, when Jupiter went into Cancer, Chiron was in Cancer. It was also the time of the Saturn, Neptune, and Uranus gathering in Capricorn. And so Jupiter then came along to expand that. And, of course, that was around the time of the Berlin Wall coming down, wasn't it, in that year or the year after that? There were so many global events that were happening that seemed pretty amazing at that particular time. Do you remember anything more specifically about that? I'm not really remembering.
Well, I think that the purpose of this call is not to do a historical analysis of all of them, but rather it was in order to bring to people's attention that there's the individual influence and meaning of Jupiter going over important things on your own chart. There's the individual meaning of the Jupiter return. There's the global meaning of the ingress of Jupiter into a different sign. But then there is this expansive activation energy of Jupiter when it happens to move into the slot, into the crosswires of these even larger and slower-moving complexes involving, like, as you mentioned, Saturn and Uranus and Neptune in the late 80s and the Uranus-Pluto thing we've got going on now, certainly the whole peak of the Uranus-Pluto conjunction as far as dramatic events on the planet, and in 65-68 time was
65, September 21st, 1965 was when Jupiter went into Cancer during that window,
But, but I'm just saying is that when Jupiter hit, the precision of the conjunction with Uranus and Pluto, that was in the summer-fall of 1968, and that was the most overwhelming, intense time period ever. So Jupiter activated that. Here now we have Jupiter in Cancer, and it is going to be this month, next month, and then also in April, another culmination of Jupiter being in the slot, being in Cancer directly connected in a T-square alignment with the Uranus Pluto square.
Mm-hmm. Right. So just really quickly for those who are on the call, I'll just give the dates of when Jupiter moved into Cancer, and if you're like in a were born in that year, then you will know after that time, after that date in that year, you'll know you're in a Jupiter return. So on June 26, 1930, June 10th, 1942, May 24th, 1954, September 21st, 1965, August 20th of 1977, and then the ones we mentioned, July 31st, 1989, and so on. So those, of course, if you want to go back a little bit further, July 13th, 1918, and July 30th, 1906. I don't think we have anybody on the call that probably that far back, but anyway, those are the dates in the last century that Jupiter moved into Cancer. So... Are we ready to open it up for questions, Daniel?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start the Q&A. And if people want to jump in, you press star 6, and that will put you in the queue, and we'll take your questions. We did get an email question, Daniel, and I think I forwarded it to you, but what I was struck by is that one of the things when Jupiter moves into Cancer, zero Cancer, it is also on the Galactic Cross, and so we might want to speak to that just a little bit. I don't know if we want to, if this is the place to answer the rest of that question, but she was asking about Jupiter entering Cancer and, you know, where that was in the sky.
Oh, the Mary's question?
Yes, uh-huh.
Regarding the relationship between the sidereal and the zodiac and the sign-based zodiac? Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe if we if we don't have anyone else asking questions, then we can do an extensive thing on that.
Right now, I don't have anybody in the queue yet. So again, press star 6, and that will put you in the queue. And if you just have comments or insights or anything you want to share as well, we'd welcome that too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now I've got people. All right. Great. Go ahead. Hello.
Hello, this is Angelica. Hi, Kayleen and Daniel.
Hi,
Angelica. Thank you again so much for your wonderful presentation. It really helps me to put things into perspective. I want to start out by just giving you my data. I was born July 6 in 1949, and my Jupiter in my original chart, my birth chart, it was retrograde. And now from what I understand, what you've been talking about is that Jupiter in Cancer, because I have Cancer in my fourth, the Sun in my fourth house, and also Uranus in the fourth house, that it somehow it gets to the angle. Is that correct? Oh, I love
I'd have to know what the angles are. What is your ascendant? What are the degrees on your angles?
Oh, okay. So in the fourth house, the Sun is 13 degrees, and Uranus is 1 degree in the fourth house.
No. What I mean, when I was talking about angles, I was referring to the degrees of the ascendant or the descendant or the midheaven or the IC.
Oh,
that's what I meant by angles.
Okay. So, all right. My ascendant is... In Aries, and that's 20 degrees, and my north node is 21 degrees, also in Aries, and then my MC is in Capricorn, 31 degrees.
So the bottom of the chart.
And the bottom of the chart is.
It can't be 31 degrees. It could be 30.
Oh, 30. Yeah, okay.
So it could be like 2959 or something like that.
What is the degree at the bottom of the chart, the so-called IC?
Uranus, okay, it's zero, 1 degree. For the IC. Okay, it's, I don't know if I say that right, but it looks like zero.
Well, the sign, what I was referring to by the movement of Jupiter over the angles was referring to the IC, which we call in shamanic astrology the home and roots part of the chart.
Uh-huh.
And the IC is always opposite the midheaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so...
if I knew that degree at the bottom of the chart...
Mm-hmm.
Then it would be easy to be able to determine when you were in the window of initiation of Jupiter crossing over that point, which can be very helpful and fortunate for, like, a move or an expansion or, you know, like selling your place or if to your advantage, things like that.
Oh, yeah,
she does have Sun in Cancer at 13 degrees. Daniel.
Yes.
I'm sorry. You know, when you gave their birth date, it wasn't clear at that instant. Tell me again your day and year.
July 6, 1949.
49. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, so that what I without knowing precisely the degree of the bottom of the chart, it is it does come across clearly here that in the time period coming up, by the end of the summer through next spring, that Jupiter will be going back and forth over your sun sign.
Okay.
So that would be something that would only happen every would happen every 12 years.
Okay.
There could be other cycles taking place here. I'd love to know the actual degree. What are you able to see the degree of the midheaven? Because then it sometimes maybe it doesn't show up on your chart clearly what the IC is, but maybe the top of the chart, the midheaven, you can see that degree?
Well, it looks like it says 0 degrees. I don't. Maybe that's not correct.
Is that next to this? So it should say MC, and then there should be the sign and degree.
Oh, I see. 7 degrees. Okay, I got it. 7 degrees MC.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So the Jupiter transit over the bottom of the chart at 7, and then your sun is also going to be in the fourth house.
Okay.
So you have Jupiter going across the bottom of the chart and the sun. That can be an extremely helpful aspect for any kind of expansion of either where you live or what you do. Because whenever Jupiter hits one angle, it's actually bringing into play the other angle also.
Okay.
What do you have in front of you? I mean, what are your possibilities over the next few months?
Okay, well, I'm very sorry. I have some problems here with my phone right now because I'm going to, if I lose contact, can I dial in a minute?
Absolutely.
Sure. My power is happening. So again, the MC is, like I said, 7 degrees.
Yes.
But on the, and it looks like,
I think I'm pretty clear about what the chart is. So what I was asking you was if you have any opportunities coming up for expanding a professional issue or for moving to a more beneficial place, Jupiter hitting your sun and hitting the bottom of the chart in this cycle can be extremely helpful.
Yes, actually, and it's very interesting what you said earlier is that when Jupiter hits significant points in your chart that, you know, with the expansion, it gives you more energy or you're more enthusiastic and gives you the extra charge. What I have noticed, though, I felt for a few months pretty stagnant, didn't know what I really want to do. Now that I'm going to be 64, you know, I mean, I have several interests and things, but I wasn't quite satisfied with the kind of work that I was doing. And I was thinking in terms of teaching, you know, because I have quite a few skills that I can give to, like, I was thinking of children in schools or others. And also, I questioned myself, am I still living here in the right place? Is that maybe the time to move on?
Right. Where are you living?
I live in Newport on the Oregon coast. And it's a very small community. And so, like, Portland is two and a half to 3 hours away. And Eugene, the southern, you know, bigger city is also, like, 3 hours away. And it just kind of, I feel that the connections of people that I know, and it would be important kind of to have that at this time period.
Yeah, so one of the objectives of having the sun in Cancer in the fourth house and having Jupiter going across the bottom of the chart is to go somewhere where there's more people who are your people.
Finding your family, your and so to speak, like the spiritual family, the family you feel, the people you feel connected with as more like a resonating in a family way.
I could also mention that just due to the nature, this is totally different than our conversation about Jupiter or Cancer, but July of this year is the magic 64 point.
Yes.
Well, the original intent of the Venus position and Mars position are at their greatest strength. I would suggest to you to think back to what you were doing, how your life was when you were 32, and then this is the higher octave of that.
Okay.
As I'm tuning into your Venus and Mars position,
mm-hmm.
I can understand how you are, have been in a time period where you're getting clear about what it is you don't want to do. But geez, this Jupiter transit is like basically saying to you, choose something. Hopefully, you know what you don't want to do. But
right.
I think it's a full speed ahead time for you.
It is, and it was so helpful, Daniel, when you mentioned earlier that, you know, what the mistakes I made before, like overprotection for my family and, you know, mm-hmm. not really looking into my own needs that much, always looking out for others, that I now was just in the last year, I'm just doing things that are very important to me and that really I want to change things in myself that I can really, you know, what you were talking about, of the special times of how we can, our purpose is changing, you know, from the householder responsibilities that we're looking for new avenues, how we can help the larger community instead of just looking out for the small
family. And you are, after all,
family.
Venus Leo, too. I mean, so you get to choose something which makes you feel like you're the creator, and you can do it because you have such joy and pleasure in doing it. I mean, I would imagine you've already paid a hell of a lot of dues taking care of other people.
Yes, that's true. And I think what I feel so strongly about that these energies that are coming in with Jupiter are going to help me to actually to materialize that. So it's not
totally
just...
Yes. That's the bottom line of your question. Yes, the
mm-hmm.
Jupiter transit is basically helpful for you to take action, progressive, proactive action right now. That's really the main thing I could share.
Right. And I, another thing, too, is concepts become clearer to me now that I really, the things become clearer for me what I want to do. You know, before it was sometimes nebulous. You know, I think, oh, that's a good idea, but now this is the way to go.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
What you're mentioning there is something that can also happen with Jupiter, and that is that it can bring a renewal of vision to you in terms of what is yours to do and where you're wanting to go. And so there's that expansion of the vision that can become more clear, and then it's time to take action on it.
Yep.
Right. I thank you so much for explaining, but I also have one more question. Is my natal Jupiter was retrograde. Does that have an impact?
Not really. No.
No.
In shamanic astrology, the retrograde cycles are usually of great importance when we're looking at Venus, Mars, and Mercury.
Okay.
But
okay.
Beyond Mars, they're retrograde so often.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very, let's just say it's a third, fourth, fifth tier of importance. I wouldn't, it's not a big deal at all.
Oh, okay. Oh, good, because I was thinking maybe that creates more tension in my life or so that
so.
I need to overcome. I mean,
so.
I didn't know.
Well, you know, I mean, that's probably not the biggest factor that would be creating tension for you. Probably
no.
More important is the fact that you have Pluto conjunct your Venus or, you know, some other aspect on your chart. Almost half the people will be born, maybe not quite half, but slightly under half, will be born with Jupiter retrograde. So it's not a significant personal event. Whereas if you're looking at Mercury, Venus, or Mars, they're not retrograde that often. So it's
mm-hmm.
far more significant, and it's part of the, you know, the whole understanding of the cycle,
mm-hmm.
Because they go retrograde far
it's
more.
It's really the kind of
rarely.
Thing that is a our views on this and our understanding of this is actually based upon knowing something about the astronomy. So the retrograde cycles of beyond Mars are more a feature of the orbital pattern of the planet, the fact that it's so far from Earth that the cycle mimics it's more of a sun-based issue. It's not based upon the actual unique characteristic of the planet as it would be for Mercury, Venus, and Mars. So I would just put that out of your attention as far as something.
Just something else quickly to say about the retrograde, when
okay.
a planet is retrograde, is it always winds up, not when it's an outer planet, always winds up opposite the sun, like a full moon effect. So rather than it being debilitated, it's, you know, closer to the Earth, it's having a full moon effect. So it can be a charged time. So it maybe is time for us to actually reconsider what we think of retrogrades, you know, because oftentimes they're considered as something that it's weakened or debilitated or, you know, it's going to take longer for you to get your act together or whatever that might be. It's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I was thinking that what Mercury effect is, you know, you had talked in the previous session about that people then use that time when it's retrograde to be more on their right brain hemisphere and more creative and,
right.
have those rather than see it as something bad, you know. So
exactly.
I thought maybe that's something for Jupiter too. But
no, not at all.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank
all
you.
Right, so thank you, Angelica. We'll go to the next question.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, this is Emma, and first of all, before we start out, I want to thank both of you for being so open to all the knowledge that you're bringing in. When you were talking to the previous lady, you answered so many of my questions. There's only one other thing that I have that's individual, is that at the time of my birth, Jupiter was in this in the slot on the T square of the Uranus Pluto square. And now with
what year was that?
1933. December 10th, 1933.
Let me look at that.
I can give you the time, 2:49 a.m.
No need on that. I'm just
okay.
Cuz I'm fascinated by that time period. Jupiter was at 18 Libra.
Correct, right. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Mars was completing the grand square mm-hmm. at being at 16 Capricorn.
Interesting indeed.
Yeah. So what's happening right now is with Cancer being on my midheaven, Jupiter will be transiting that. And this is very interesting. I am really formating a particular thought of really doing shamanic astrology very seriously. And age has no difference, makes no difference to me. I mean, if I need to, I'll live to be 100. Okay.
love that.
But now, during this transit, Jupiter will be squaring the natal Pluto at 24 Cancer.
It's going to conjunct it, actually.
It's going to conjunct it, yeah. It'll mm-hmm. conjunct it. So we're actually planning on going back to Arizona as our permanent home, from Alaska to Arizona. And I keep on getting this feeling that this is the year to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And did you say you have Cancer Midheaven?
Cancer Midheaven. Yeah, and that's right. The expansion of my profession.
What is the degree of it?
My midheaven is at 22 Cancer.
Right. I keep thinking about that, like this thing coming up in April of next year.
Mm-hmm.
With the placements, didn't we discuss? Isn't it Mars involved too at that point, Kaylin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so here we have the horoscope time, the time period, you have it personally, obviously, but this time period around November, December, January of 1933-34, we have the very phenomena that is going to be replicated in this next month and then even more so in April of next year.
Oh, wow.
Because you have Pluto, Uranus, and Jupiter in a on your natal chart in a T-square, with Mars, filling it out, and that same thing happens in April of next year. So, I mean, I actually agree with your Jupiter, with Jupiter in Cancer moving up to Pluto, also in alignment with Uranus, with Jupiter, Mars, all the main features. It looks to me that would be the fulfillment of what the original intent of your natal chart is about.
which has 50 different meanings to me because my life, I have lived 4 incarnations already in this lifetime.
Yeah. But since it's Jupiter in the midheaven, that's letting us know what the leading edge of it is at this particular time period, which is, right livelihood and where you live.
Daniel, when we were living in Iowa in the early 80s, I met this very wonderful psychic, and I went to her for a particular reason. She did a whole reading on me being an astronomer, or an astronomer astrologer, BC in Egypt, and that this lifetime was the fulfillment of what I had learned in that lifetime. And I just couldn't accept it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now's the time. And see, the expansion, if you think about Jupiter going over the midheaven and the expansion of your creative contribution in the world. So, the midheaven can be seen as your work in the world, but another way to say that is it's your creative contribution, where you make a mm-hmm. contribution in the world. And so what is the skill set? What is the expansion of the knowledge and information or creative contribution that you have to make happening? And so perhaps now's the time for you to be tapped into something that you know and can bring from the past to this time now. Yeah.
I was very disenchanted with traditional astrology. I started studying 40 years ago and just sort of put it aside for years until I met you, Daniel, in Arizona in the 80s. You stimulated me at that. And then I lost track of you and finally found you again.
Well, and what an amazing time for that to happen. I mean, because I keep thinking about this larger global pattern of the relationship between the Jupiter, Uranus, Pluto, and Mars from the 1960s to the 1930s. And here you are that actually have that, in your own chart, your original chart, that as an individual who's conscious at this point, it kind of reminds me of something that my teacher, Dane Rajar, used to say, is that clearly there would have been, many, many, many thousands of people born with this particular signature, but as in 1933. But what Rajar said was, the universe has a particular need. The universe needs to have something done, and the gauntlet is thrown down, and there could be a lot of people that have this configuration, but only some will take it up. And you seem to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because this was forming, this aspect is forming big time in 1933, and then you lived through it in the 60s, and now at this phase of your life is the next, the next outpicturing of the very same set of relationships.
But the miracle of all of this is in 2007, 2008, I technically should have left this planet. The only thing that keeps me here is my little electronic pacemaker. So there has to be a reason for it. And
I would suspect that you have the intent, since I'm getting all these feelings about how it's connected into Rajar's vision of how these things happen, that you certainly want to make it to your to the big Uranian return.
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yes, definitely.
And we'll have a party when that happens.
Okay, I will let you know. Thank you so very much, and God bless you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So that's all the questions that are in the queue at this time. And if there's anybody else who wants to jump in, please feel free. Press *6 and you can jump in. And maybe we want to take time to address the question that Mary sent in.
Yes, would you recapitulate it?
Yes, I will. Basically, she was asking, she wanted to understand the constellations as they interface with the planets.
Mm-hmm.
She used a specific example of, say, how does 6 degrees Aries show up in the sky, and, something about constellation Cancer. Mm-hmm. But my sense of what we would really want to speak to here, because I think she was wanting to know, like, where would we see Jupiter in relationship to the backdrop of the stars? And Mary, if you're on the call, feel free to jump in and we can clarify this. But the thing that's really remarkable about where Jupiter is right now, even though it's not something we can see because the sun is there, is that it's on the galactic cross. That's something that we've talked about, I think, in previous classes, where the plane of the solar system is intersecting the plane of the galaxy, and that's where the summer solstice sun is rising, and Jupiter happens to be there right now, and it can only be there every 12 years. And so if we could see it, we'd be able to know exactly where that galactic cross is. By the time it becomes visible in July, it'll have moved a little bit beyond the cross and we'll be entering into the twins, the constellation of the twins. Is there more you want to say about that, Daniel?
Oh, it's just that one of the foundations of shamanic astrology is the integration of the star-based zodiac with the seasonal zodiac. We've talked about that many times, and it's one of the features of our training, is so that shamanic astrologer will understand how these two things interact with each other. The really great thing about zero Cancer, or the beginning of Cancer at this time period in history, is, as you pointed out, it's on the galactic edge. It's on one of the two crosses. Cancer is not always going to be there. You know, so if you know anything about the stars, there is a very prominent and beautiful configuration of stars, the Lakota call the hoop, the sacred hoop. And in the center of the hoop, the place where the plane of the galaxy and the plane of the solar system cross, using the Western symbols, right in between the feet of the twins and the horns of the bull, is the zero Cancer point right now. Zero Cancer, we're referring to not because of the stars, like the constellation of Cancer or the constellation of the called Cancer, but we're talking about actually a place along the seasonal plane, which is the seasonal zodiac, the signs. And then zero Cancer is right smack in the middle of that hoop right now. And if you know the stars of the hoop, from zero Cancer to 23 Cancer stretches from the middle of the hoop until the stars Castor and Pollux, right at the edge of the hoop. So the placement of Cancer, and as we see Jupiter moving through Cancer, it's not related to the star group of the same name. And that's a much larger story, a telling that we've had in certain other teleclasses. And by the way, Kaylin, I am still getting, in fact, I gave a talk the other night and two nights ago, and yes, indeed, somebody in the room said, well, what about the 13th sign?
Oh, yeah.
And I had to tell the story of, you know, the 1929 AAU and how they carved up the sky and people don't know the difference between the seasonal zodiac and the star-based zodiac. So it's it takes a fair amount of time of working with the sky to really be able to tune into this immediately. So you, when you look at a planet in the sky and you can simultaneously say, ah, that planet is a 2 degrees Cancer. But, oh my gosh, the stars of Cancer are way over there. You know, and to be able to actually see how those two things fit together.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why we wouldn't even say the stars of Cancer. We would say the stars of the crab. The other thing is that if people look at the logo of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, it shows the current overlay of the seasonal signs with the constellations. And at the bottom of that logo, right between where it says the sign of Gemini and the sign of Cancer, is the bull and the twins. And so and if you draw a line straight up from there, that is where the summer solstice sun is rising. That's where Jupiter would be located right now. So you can just look at that logo to get a sense of it. The other thing I want to mention is that if you're up early in the morning on July 6th, you might get to see the crescent moon with Mars, and that's right at the tip of the horn of the bull that's called Alheka, the southern horn of the bull. And they're going to be surrounding it. They'll be on either side of it. And Jupiter then won't be visible because it's just in the glow of the rising sun. But it's just it would be sitting like right on the horizon from that point. And then on July 22nd, this is just for people who really want to get that visual, there's going to be a Mars-Jupiter conjunction in the morning sky around 5 a.m. should be visible. And they'll be in the foot of the twins, the left that foot of the twins that's kind of very near the galactic edge there. So, and both in Cancer, but definitely you can see them with the near that Roman numeral 2 that is the constellation of the twins. So it's another way to start to get that visual connection and understanding by being able to see it in the sky with these planets marking out where. Knowing that they're in those signs, but seeing that they're in these other constellations that are not of the same name.
Something else that occurred to me is that when the first person who called was questioning about whether it's important that Jupiter was retrograde, there's another phenomena that I'd like to bring up, which is definitely worthy of research. And that is that every year in the Jupiter cycle, Jupiter will be invisible from sight, which in our language of this is called when Jupiter is in the underworld. And I was thinking of this as you were describing, you know, where Jupiter is now and how it'll be rising in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so? This year in the Jupiter cycle, the time period that Jupiter has been invisible on the other side of the sun in the underworld is from June 5th until about July 4th. So it's about a month every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually invite anyone who is interested in these ways of thinking to do some research about how that month in the Jupiter cycle, how that has some potential meaning, you know, for people. Like we always say in shamanic astrology here that the way the ancients knew about the underworld process, which modern astrologers today know through Pluto, you know, if you have Pluto square or Pluto conjunction, you know, it's an underworld initiation. But the way the ancients knew these things was when Venus and Mars were invisible on the other side of the sun. But what about Jupiter? There is, in fact, a very distinct point, 1 month every year, when Jupiter is invisible. And I found it very intriguing that this time the ingress happened when Jupiter was invisible. And that doesn't always happen like that. I mean, the ingress doesn't always happen during the time when Jupiter is on the other side of the sun in the underworld.
So close to the solstice. That
right.
Is why. Right, right, because it's with the sun close to the solstice.
Now, if I was going to kind of speculate and give a, you know, just to make up an interpretation, you know, the inspiration that comes through here would be that any time any planet is right around zero Cancer, that is the place in the cosmos, that's the place in the greater cosmology where new creation comes through. The so-called Silver Gate, where souls enter, where there's the new input of inspiration, and all new creation comes in that gate, right in the middle of the sacred hoop. And so therefore, here we would have Jupiter on the other side of the sun, very close to the solstice point, receiving this input, this new imagery about Cancer coming through from the celestial universal underworld on the other side of the sun, coming in. So when I use the word underworld, please, it's not intended to mean something negative. It's a it's actually blinded by the light, you know. I mean, it's so blinded by the light of the sun it can't be seen, so there's an illumination taking place. So I'd like to speculate and say that this particular ingress into Cancer, based on where it was when the ingress happened, is a spectacular higher octave of the necessity of seeing Cancer in a less provincial way, in a less culturally relativistic way, but to see it truly as a global process. The truth of we being the same people for 240,000 years, regardless of color of our skin or economic status or class or caste and all the rest of it, I mean, it's a new situation. I mean, maybe it's always been that way, but now on a practical Cancerian level, we have to look at it as, you know, one family or none.
Mm-hmm. It looks like Mary's in the queue, so I'm gonna bring her on so we can see what more she has to say about that.
Hi,
Mary.
let's see. My question feels like it's extremely advanced, but I hope it can be simple. I guess I'm kind of curious as to what a birth chart could look like three dimensionally, and I guess I just it's a naive understanding if Cancer is not even near a planet that is supposedly in the sign of Cancer. I guess I'm trying to understand things visually, and then also astrology goes back so far as an ancient practice that was obviously cultivated through observing the night sky. And
Mary, have you heard any of our classes or been to any event where we spent time explaining how this all took place?
No, I've just become drawn to your school.
Let me quickly give you this one piece of the puzzle, and then you can put this together with what Kaylin and I were saying over the last 5 or 10 minutes. If we go back prior to Hellenistic times,
mm-hmm.
Most of the world that we know of were using star-based zodiacs. And, you know, different cultures would project different stories or different pictures onto the stars they saw. Usually it would be connected to the terrain, the weather, the reality of that particular land at that particular time. Then what happened around the time of the Hellenistic culture, they began to notice that with some of the pictures in the sky where they would have stories projected onto them,
mm-hmm.
that they would show up at the wrong seasons.
Mind you, these stories would also be connected to their seasonal celebrations their ceremonies and their this is like very unsettling for them to see this happening.
So the stories that were projected onto the star pictures would show up at the wrong times.
Got it.
So the Hellenistic culture, in their brilliance, made an innovation, which was to say we need to also have a seasonal zodiac, which is based upon the actual position of solstices and equinoxes.
Okay.
And then for a period of time, certainly during Ptolemy's time, in 200 AD or so, in those teachings, they had both reference points, you know. So in fact, one of the questions that was in the school asked was, what is the proportion by which the constellation informs the sign?
Right.
So they knew about both of them. But then, you know, then we have the Dark Ages. We have the burning of the library at Alexandria. And then also, as far as language goes, then it turns out that they were naming in Greece the constellational groups by the same name as the signs.
That's the seasons, right.
Which were seasonal. And so it got all very jumbled up and confused.
Uh-huh.
One quick thing about way I remember this stuff is I have a 22-degree Libra rising. Well, it turns out that's the Star of Spica. Now, the Star of Spica is right in the middle of the Virgin Priestess.
Uh-huh. Also known as Virgo.
Right.
Okay.
So whenever I consider any horoscope, mine or anybody else's, that has something in late Libra, let's say,
mm-hmm.
I'm also remembering very much that that there's the lineup between the sign Libra, the latter degrees of Libra, is lined up right with the center part of the body of the Virgin Priestess.
Okay.
So those two things are continually informing each other.
Right, great.
But it's not a static system. It's over a period of time, every constellational group gets to line up with every sign.
So, I mean, if you think about where the summer solstice is right now, that there's a certain experience you have in summer. You know, so that there are certain celebrations, there are certain ceremonies, there are certain ways of engaging that seasonal time, and the stars that are behind it, you know, they have a certain meaning, as we were just describing about, you know, it's on the galactic edge, and there's this new information coming through that portal and that gateway, and blah blah blah. Well, if it was a different season. So say, you know, 13,000 years ago, it was the winter solstice that was there. They would be having completely different ceremonies and different information coming through as a result of their experience of that seasonal time in relationship to those stars.
Uh-huh. So I know I don't mean to spend too much time here, but so we have the zodiac is a band, right? Astrologically, it's a band in it that we visually see.
The zodiac,
well, yeah,
is the
but you can project any kind of mapping system onto it. You know, so if you look at the ecliptic, the path of the sun, and you can actually then measure it by the stars along it, or you can measure it by where these equinoxes and the solstices are along it.
I guess I had this vision that in ancient times. Like the noticing of these constellations that were, you know, created a band throughout a year.
That's true.
Right, like year after
yes.
year. Look at that, right? And then, how do the planets, if at all, do they intersect with the constellations?
They're moving through the constellations, and they're also moving through the signs. So when a planet is at zero Cancer by sign.
Uh-huh.
It's right at the galactic edge.
Uh-huh.
If a planet happens to reach 22 Libra by sign, it happens to be passing by Spica.
Uh-huh.
Mary, do you have the Shamanic Astrology Handbook?
I do have it.
So if you look at the front cover, you look at the logo.
Right.
On the outer wheel is the signs.
Right.
So, and on the inner wheel is the constellations, and they're so it's showing you that they're two different wheels or two different mechanisms, and that the signs actually, because of precession and the movement of how the Earth is wobbling through space and so on, those seasonal signs actually shift through those constellations 1 degree every 72 years, about 26,000 years for it to make one whole circuit. So you can imagine that outer wheel can spin around those constellations. So maybe that will help you with the visual.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling I'm going to go through your training. the part is I visually want to understand the planet's relationship. So like if the planets were also in the graphic.
Well, the planets are constantly moving, so you can't really put them in the graphic on a static graphic. Yeah.
I know that.
Right now, where you would see Jupiter, is on the line between Gemini and Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
If you just draw right up between the bull and the twins, it's sitting right between them right now.
Okay.
And then over this next year, it's going to move all the way through the twins.
Okay.
And by the
I get that.
Yeah.
I look at the the birth charts, general birth charts, and I just always wonder what a three-dimensional model would look like. And
that
well,
may
there,
be coming.
You can actually, in fact, even on Solar Fire, you can put out a you can have your chart printed out on a wheel that has the constellations that has the signs both together.
Okay, I'll look at that.
Yeah.
Right, were there anybody else in the queue, by the way?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right. Well, so that would, then we have this extra little piece on here today that is a majorly interesting extrapolation of basic Jupiter Cancer stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I guess we're ready to wrap this up, and we'd like to thank everybody for joining us. If you have questions or insights or ahas or anything, to take note of them, and when we do the next class, if you're part of the next class, then we would be happy to take a little bit of time to answer questions that might have been left over from this class. And the next class is happening in July. Do you have the date handy? I'm looking it up. On July 28th, and we're going to be talking about Chiron in that class. Is there anything you want to add to that, Daniel?
Same time on Sunday the 28th at noon Hawaii time.
3 o'clock Pacific.
Yes. Nothing else really specifically about Chiron at the moment. Just I'm hoping that some of you, those of you that are really inspired by what we're doing, will have that inspiration spontaneously. I want to go over and join you all in Hawaii.
We'd love to have you.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right, so until next time, thank you so much, and we'll be sending out information about the next call that'll be all about Chiron.
Okay, thanks, Kaylin. Right. I'll talk to
thanks,
you in a
Daniel.
Few. So,
okay, bye.